Blog Talk Radio.
Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there is a better way to work.
So, from Success Radio, pleased to be saying hi to you today. Hope you have had a good weekend and you're having a good week so far. And I'm consultant working with Engage Success on social media and digital. And I'm hoping to be joined by Joe, who's one of our co-hosts from in the last few weeks. I couldn't hear her, so I'm not sure whether she's going to be joining us or not. So we'll see if she suddenly pops up. So today we're going to be talking to the lovely Doug Shaw, and I'll introduce him shortly, and we're going to be having quite an informal day. We'll start with some topics and see where that takes us. I have to tell you that I am today, so it might be a bit noisy, which is part of the reason Jo was joining in, so that she could take over if things got rather noisy, but hopefully it won't be too bad, so hopefully you'll just bear with me. Doug, and then we'll talk about if there's any coming up in Engage Success over the next week or two that you might be interested in. And I'll let you know what's on the show next week. So we'll start by introducing Doug, who I met probably about 6 weeks or so ago now. He's been popping sort of comments and so on Twitter, and to get together and have a coffee and have a chat about the movie we operate and see sort of where the sort of synergies. And then that we decided to get together on the radio. So I'm really pleased to be introducing Doug. Are you there, Doug?
I certainly am, yes. Hello, Jo.
Oh, it went all... So Doug's an organisational consultant, and one of Doug is the company. So got what goes around? And maybe you could tell us about where that came from. You're stopped doing dumb things for customers, which I think is a great name for an organization. So you, Doug, and what you do now and where these really cool titles for for organizations and consultancies come from.
Thank you. Well, what goes around wasn't my idea. It was a gentleman by the name of David Shanks, who I occasionally reimburse him with the odd beer by way of a thank you. But he and I spent a lot of time talking about what the company should be called, and he felt that those three words kind of epitomised the essence of how I like to do business. So I'm a big fan of reciprocity. I like the whole pay it forward idea. Is a lot of good fun. And it just sounds better than you reap what you sow, I think. So that's how what goes around came into being. And stop doing dumb things to customers was something that was born out of an experiment that I first began to conduct when I worked in BT. And it was all about the drive to bring the world of the employee and the customer closer together through a more conversational environment. Just to understand more about what the different groups' needs and wants are, if you like, because I don't think any of us go to work intending to do dumb things to our customers, but very often work gets in the way, and that's the way it ends up. So it was kind of a bit of fun, but it's stuck and it's developed, and we run some events under that banner, some big ones, some small ones. As you know, I blog under Stop Doing Dumb Things now and play around a bit on Facebook too. But it really at the essence of what interests me is trying to bring different groups of people in and around the world of work closer together, improve our understanding of one another, and just try and take a look at how we can each impact on the bigger picture. So very often, you know, a workplace will have a kind of siloed mentality, if you like, and it's not an uncommon turn of phrase, and I think that one of the biggest problems with that is that people don't really appreciate the effect of what they're doing and how it impacts either positively or negatively on other people. So I think the more we can do to open those lines of communication and let information flow back and forth, up and down, the better, quite frankly.
Yeah. Okay, and some of the been people who have that in their job title, aren't you? And you're not that keen on that.
Which term was that, sorry?
Employee engagement, wasn't that job title at BT?
Yes, it was part of it, yes. And I know, and it is one of these things that, you know, I can't help but feel that if we were, let's not get too bogged down in definitions, but I think the practice, if you like, of making work better is a collective responsibility. And I think that on the one hand, people appreciate having some focus on what it is they're doing and what they're trying to do. On the other hand, I can remember trying to get the right stuff done for what I felt were the right reasons for colleagues and customers in big companies. And there's always some reason why that's somebody else's responsibility now, or that's people stuff, that's HR's job or whoever's job. I happen to think that employee engagement is a somewhat nebulous concept. I think Neil Morrison articulates it along the lines of just doing the right thing for your people for the right reasons. And I think that to that extent, it opens up the field for anyone to play, if you like. And so I think one of the reasons where something like a movement like this could be really interesting is actually through actively reaching beyond the sort of core audience or whatever you want to call it, and actually actively going out looking for dissenters, troublemakers, and trying to kind of shake the whole diversity in a traditional and less traditional sense, you know, of the whole thing up a little bit, really.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, we do talk about... ...who get what we... ...to go out to the people who are... ...and maybe, as you say, are the sort of agitators and the people who may be doing the opposite of what we... would be hoping, and sort of getting to the nub of why that is and what can be done differently, I guess. Can I just say, I think Jay might...
Hello?
No.
Hello?
How are you?
I am. I'm here.
Are you there?
I am. I've been here for ages.
Oh, yes. I couldn't... We've lost Doug. It looks like he's dropped out. So I'll just carry on.
Okay, Joe, you actually are dropping out an awful lot. There's big chunks of what you're saying is missing. So when you said to Doug about employee engagement as a phrase, or that he has a problem with, he couldn't actually hear the phrase because you've disappeared.
That'll be why then. So I'm hoping Doug will come back in. Perhaps you might take a bit more of a role in the interview then on that. People can't really hear.
I'll try.
It's obviously something. Well, that's good. Thank you.
So I'll try. Yeah.
In. So we were talking about, if you were there, so about the idea of sort of diversity and seeking out people who are perhaps sounding sort of seeming to be on board, on message or whatever with things, and actually using the opportunity of that difference, if you like, to make to do things differently.
Hello, can anyone hear me?
Yes, I can.
we've lost Doug completely, I think, have we?
Yeah, we have. I think Doug's on his way back. Here we go.
Hello again. Sorry about that, folks. I began to get about one word in every sentence of yours, Joe, and then you disappeared, and I wasn't sure. So forgive me, but I've cut the call and dialed back in again.
Hello, Doug. It's Jo Moffat here now, Doug, as well.
Hello.
I'm going to kind of co-host this with the other Jo, I think, because I was having the same problem with hearing what she's saying. I think it's probably her line rather than yours, actually.
Well, not to worry.
So can you hear me? Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
You can. Lovely. All right. So Jo, shall I try and sort of do a little bit more then if we're having some technical challenges? Okay, sorry for those listening who are having a few technical hitches, but hopefully we'll be okay. So Doug, obviously being involved in the task force for Engage for Success, as I understand it, with a background at BT, yeah, is that
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah.
Yeah. I've long moved on from BT, we'll focus more on the world of work now, if you don't mind, than
yes, of course,
than so, where I've come from. But yes,
absolutely.
For my sins, I did spend 12 and a half years there. Yes.
Rightio. Rightio. So I think we were just before we lost you, we were touching on a topic which actually I briefly touched on when I interviewed David McLeod a couple of weeks ago, which was really around the conversation about taking the Engage for Success message to people who are less willing to hear it. I think you talk about trying to drive a bit of a more challenging agenda. And is that what you mean, trying to get out there to people who are perhaps less, rather than sort of sit preaching to the choir all the time? Is that what you...
Well, I think so. And I think... Mm. So there's two aspects of this that interest me, if you like. So one is, that point entirely. How do you drive a more... Or how do you challenge the status quo more effectively?
Mm-hmm.
And I think to some extent... that's born out of historic observations of mine, of having been involved in this work. So put the original report to one side.
Mm-hmm.
I made a small contribution to that, but then when everything kind of began to reemerge again, David was kind enough to ask me to come along and play some more, and mm-hmm. I'm inherently curious, so I was happy to do so.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to be rude about what I'm about to say, but one of the first things that I observed at some of these bigger group meetings that I was kind enough to be invited along to was that they were broadly, I think they represented the most current, the kind of today of work. I mean, I'm 48 years old, and it's not often I go into a room of 50 people and think I'm one of the youngest ones there.
Mm.
My challenge back to the movement, before it even thought of calling itself a movement, was that's all very well and good, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful or take anything away from the intelligence and the desire in the room, but where's tomorrow's world of work?
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that I observed and fed back at the time was that these groups were predominantly white men.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I felt that, on a broad sort of diversity agenda, then I didn't feel particularly comfortable with that. But primarily because I think that there are lots of different threads to this whole sort of engagement principle, if you like. And so I think that one of the things that the group should do, and I'm really chuffed to see that David and Rachel Miller, I think it was, were out in Italy last week.
Yes.
So one of the things I'd be fascinated of, I've already read Rachel's blog on that, and I think it's great that we're swapping stuff internationally now. And one of the things I think would really excite me would be an opportunity to learn from Rachel and David what the differences were, as well as what the similarities are.
Mm.
And I think one of the challenges that help make movements like this succeed is how do we kind of integrate the difference without losing it?
Mm-hmm.
How can we capture a broad range of viewpoints and try and act on a number of fronts without diluting too much what it is we do?
Mm-hmm.
So I think one of the things that could be, a group of people I'd be really interested to engage with are perhaps people who've been in the world of work, let's say, for 12 months or less.
Mm-hmm.
As a specific target group, I wonder what they'd have to say about what the future world of work looks like.
Mm-hmm. Because, well, it's interesting, of course, isn't it, that when you certainly the sort of employee engagement or employee satisfaction surveys that I've looked at with some of my clients is that there's a good spike, as you would hope, in that with people who've been employed in an organisation for the first 12 months, and then it tends to tail off a bit, and then it tends to kind of kick back up again as they get closer to retirement, or they've been there a considerably long time, and that's interesting in itself, isn't it? Because when people join an organisation, you've got as a employer, you have an enormous responsibility and an enormous opportunity to actually maintain that momentum and use that momentum for good, haven't you?
Yeah, no, you do, and I think I have observed that in some of the data I've seen and anecdotally as well. And I think it's a really fascinating situation, really. So what is it that the world of work is doing to people in that first year that manages to squeeze all of that enthusiasm out of them?
Yes. Well, I wonder whether
some of it...
And I put
that a bit harshly, deliberately, because I know that it's maybe not as bad as that, but, I mean, it is really interesting that for those companies who choose to measure this stuff... And again, I think we must be careful not to become a slave to the number, because it is just one of a number of things that we can use to get a sense of what the world of work is like, either for a specific company or group of companies, or even a region or the world as a whole. Mm. But I do think it's interesting that we suffer from this dilution of enthusiasm that as you say. Quite often comes back when people are in those last few years, and you kind of, I hope it isn't that they're getting more excited because they're about to step off the wheel.
Leave.
But you can't help but draw that conclusion as well at the same time, I suppose.
Oh, how cynical, Doug. How cynical of you.
but it's a sunny day, and I'm in a slightly, I just think I'm not being too serious about it, but it is.
Maybe
we haven't got the time to kind of kick that around too much today, but I think it's a really interesting.
I think it's a really interesting
way of looking at things. So what could we learn? Perhaps from so rather than survey people, rather than try and get maybe a group of established practitioners in the room who all have value to contribute. Don't get me wrong, but I wonder whether or not the movement could reach out to some of its sort of sponsoring companies and say, we'd like access to half a dozen of your new grads for half a day to workshop with them what good work looks like. Because you've got a huge amount of organisations that you can tap into. I'm sure that people like me would share that invitation among our own networks. And I think it would be really interesting to see what that particular group of people would have to say. This might be going a bit too far, but youth unemployment's a big problem. So I suppose if you were to tackle that particular market, they might just say, listen, I just want a job.
Mm.
But again, I wonder how that sort of sector of the economy would feel about being engaged on a subject like that. Like I say, they might not see it as a priority, perhaps. But I think it's I think there's lots of possibilities and lots of excitement there, and I think it would help raise credibility further in terms of consulting with those different groups of people, and certainly I think make it easier maybe. Or make it more likely that the people who are sitting in offices at the moment saying this stuff's a whole load of old rubbish, I just don't buy into it. I think if you were to take a more diverse range of viewpoints along to them and say these are the kind of things we're looking at, actually we appreciate and value your cynicism. Could we talk to you about that?
Absolutely. I think it's interesting with the group you've identified there, Doug, because if we could identify. I've got my own personal thoughts as to some of the things that happened, but if we could actually say, well, look, this is what they were like when they first joined. Within the first 12 months, these were the sort of levels of motivation, and then after that, it starts to drop off Why does it start to drop off? What can we do differently? And also identify, as indeed has already been identified in a large part of this, what's the cost of them dropping off? You know, and that enormous investment that organisations, particularly those that go through incredibly complex graduate assessment processes to try and find the right talent, and they come in all sort of bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and enthusiastic about something that's going to, you know, they've been offered, and then 18 months, 2 years down the line, they're thinking, right, time to move on. Hasn't lived up to my expectations, and that's an enormous waste of resources from everyone's perspective, isn't it? Really. So,
it is really quite sad. And again, I don't want this to be a kind of violin playing half an hour, but it does make you wonder what is it, and there will be some, you know, there's going to be a degree of natural desire to move on, and there's just going to be genuine mistakes. You know, I think one of the things
that
work needs to get more comfortable with is acknowledging that failure is an inherent and absolutely vital part of the pathway to success.
Mm. And that covers everything, recruitment as well as everything else. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So I know from my own experience as a hiring manager over the years that I've made one or two bad choices, and I feel personally very uncomfortable about that because they're not fair on the rest of the team, not fair on the person, a whole load of reasons. But I think you learn from these things and you try to do something a little bit different next time. Mm-hmm. But nothing goes right all the time. So I think that it's perfectly acceptable to, I say, it's not. Accepting a degree of failure is an inherent part of success, so it's not that in itself that's the problem. But I think there's a lot to be learned from looking at these things in more detail and just trying to understand, you know, what it is, what's driving people away, or what's not motivating them enough.
Absolutely. So that leads on to another point that I was quite interested in picking up with you, if I may, which is picking up the point you've made that not everything always goes right, not every recruitment decision always goes right, not everything in the workplace always goes right, and and sometimes that leads to conflict. And I wondered if you've got some views around the role that conflict can have in the workplace, and whether you perhaps like to share some of those with us.
Okay. Well, I think, I mean, it's there, it's everywhere, but it's one of those, I don't like this phrase very much, but I can't think of a better one right now. It's kind of an elephant in the room, if you like. It's one of these things that happens all around us. We're, most of us, not particularly well equipped to deal with it, and so what we tend to do is maybe brush stuff under the carpet. So I think that the interesting thing around conflict is that it goes hand in hand with how it's dealt with goes hand in hand with how comfortable people feel to speak up in an organisation.
So that ties into both employer voice in terms of the four enablers and the manager effectiveness of the manager, doesn't it? Really, then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. And again, I think to be able to. To be able to tolerate dissenting voices, tolerate's the wrong word. That sounds like we'll just about put up with it. I think there's more. There's got to be more to it than that. Actually, there's got to be an acceptance and actually a recognition that that just because that person over there isn't saying what all the rest are saying doesn't make them wrong.
No, and doesn't necessarily mean that they're disengaged either. It actually means it might well mean that they care enormously.
Well. So I think that's a really interesting point you've just put there, and I think that very often, all too often, they're seen as the kind of fly in the ointment or whatever you want to call it. And I think there is a point, perhaps the struggle with some of these things is there perhaps is a point when if somebody's continually kind of not fitting whatever it is, then maybe they are best off somewhere else. I don't know. And again, that's a whole topic for a whole other conversation, managing performance and fit and what have you. But I think one of the really interesting things about a diverse organization, be it an employer, be it a movement, be it a club, be it whatever it is its ability to integrate differences without losing them.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very easy thing to say. It's a much harder thing to do. But I think there's lots of opportunity. If like you say, to be able to have those kind of open, honest conversations. So you mentioned conflict a minute ago. I mean, why is it that I think one of the ways that work works in terms of you've got people who report into people, when a line manager gets feedback from a colleague that they're not enjoying working with another colleague, very often what that sets off is a kind of sort of more sort of triangular shaped conversation. And I think that it's important for people in management to turn around and say, well, have you talked to so-and-so about it? And very often the answer will be, oh, no, they never listen, or no, I haven't, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Well,
ooh, no, I couldn't possibly.
Yeah. Go and have the dialogue now. Have the conversation. And actually, if the two of you can't sort it out, then maybe we can do something to mediate. But I find that the general default in work is that people go and complain to other people. They don't deal with the problem by having the conversation. Mm-hmm. And so I think that what that just makes is a bad situation a lot worse. And again, it just links back to that whole thing about I feel safe to speak up around here, and I think that my manager's got my kind of best interests at heart, if you like.
Absolutely. So do you get involved in that kind of thing professionally, Doug? Is that something that you work with organizations to help with?
Well, I'm not a trained mediator. I mean,
right.
What really interests me, I've done some work this year around managing difficult conversations, and I think that the main reason why conversations become difficult is because, like I say, people generally don't have them early enough.
Or they shy away from having them, don't they?
Indeed.
Mm.
So I'm more interested in the conversation that goes on between different groups of people at work around the subject of how do we make this thing work better. And those people could be people in different departments, different teams. And actually, I firmly believe that they should include people from outside the business as well. So suppliers, customers, and all sorts of other people. And I think one of the things that really excites me about this kind of more emerging, more social way of doing business is that we've got lots of opportunities to kind of connect those groups together, get them having more helpful conversations. Because, like I say, I don't believe people go to work to want to do a bad job. But very often work gets in the way, and I'm sure we could all think of frustrating stories where we've been on the end of, a piece of really clunky process that's either as an internal or external customer that's really wound us up, when we actually know that what we're doing, what we really want to do is deal with human beings and be treated in a more, humanized way of working, which is born out of better conversations, I think.
Yes. Yeah, it's interesting, actually. I think on reflection, you were just talking there about the great opportunity that social media has provided for us all to sort of work in slightly more collaborative and connected ways. And I guess thinking about it, the whole sort of Engage for Success movement is its lifeblood, actually, if you think about it, because I think probably it would have been very difficult to have got something off the ground on the scale that it is with the kind of exposure and involvement of such a broad number of people if it hadn't been for things like social media and the power of LinkedIn and Twitter and blogs and all of that. I guess it would have been much longer in the birthing process, I think, probably. So
indeed, I don't doubt it, and that's not to say that these things are a sort of universal panacea and what have you.
No.
But they do offer more opportunities for connection and collaboration than the kind of workplace that I wandered into 20 odd years ago, for sure.
Mm.
So I think it's in that respect it's a good time to be playing around with these things and trying to drive that more constructively challenging agenda that I think a movement like this should be embracing and doing.
Mm. Okay, so as well as perhaps looking at trying to sort of think about other groups where this message might be appropriate. So as you say, the sort of the new starters, perhaps. Are there any other areas where you think there's some missed opportunities, Doug, in terms of taking this challenging agenda onwards a bit?
Well, I just conscious of the time, and I think we're probably going to get cut off in a second. But I mean, like I say, I think the opportunity to invite
a diverse group of people together to have the conversation in any workplace is one that should be embraced. So mm-hmm. I think to that extent, diversity beats quantity every time. So one of the great things, if you like them, about surveys is you can hit a whole load of people, but getting the kind of nuances and the depth is less easy. So again, this is where I think a more sort of conversational style can be really helpful.
How can
we facilitate conversations amongst a group of people that work in different departments, have different tenures, come from different backgrounds, and try and get a more holistic view of what the future world of work looks like, rather than something that tends to happen accidentally. I'm not saying we do it on purpose, but we tend to end up with a narrower perspective when we maybe just look to the HR community or another community for the answers. And again, I'm not trying to knock them, but I just think those kind of differences are easy to bring in and bring around the table. And I think that for me is a really exciting opportunity for something like this movement to be tackling in any workplace.
Okay, Doug, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to end you there. I think we may even have been cut off mid-flow there, but that was great. I'm sorry about the problems at the beginning.
We can do it again sometime if it goes down badly, then you can just blame me, can't you?
We'll blame the technology. I'm going to cut you off very rapidly now.
All right.
Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Bye.